It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 880 for the 3rd of May, 2024. This week, when something goes wrong with your computer, it might be easier, faster, and less frustrating to fix it yourself instead of dealing with tech support. In short circuits, every computer screen is different and your vision is unique to your eyes. That's why it's a good idea to use Microsoft's ClearType Text Tuner. And you'll start to see computers being marketed with heavy AI claims soon, probably before the end of this year, but waiting for the next generation in late 2025 is probably wise. Are you sometimes amazed by how quickly a tech support person can solve a problem, at least once you finally get to the tech support person? Those who provide tech support probably aren't any more intelligent than you are. They just have some tricks up their sleeves. It's probably safe to say that at least 77.67% of all people who work or have worked in tech support have, or at some time in their careers, have had a cartoon by XKCD posted on the wall of their work area. Oh, and by the way, 77.67% of all statistics are made up on the spot. And I just made that up, too. Randall Monroe, who draws a webcomic called XKCD, published the Tech Support Cheat Sheet on the 24th of August, 2009. It reveals, somewhat honestly, how tech support actually works. Those who work in tech support have some resources that consumers don't have, a corporate knowledge base, for example, and a certain amount of experience in answering common questions. But the average person can make a lot of progress using the comic flowchart. It's faster, too. You may have to wait half an hour or more to get even to a level one tech support person, and it might take a day or more to escalate the issue if your question is more complex. I can often solve a problem on my own faster than I can get an answer from tech support. And you probably think that's true because I'm a tech guy. Well, yes, I have spent a fair amount of time around computers, and I've worked in offices near the tech support gang, but I'm more of a words and pictures guy than a hardware and software guy. I can write relatively basic website applications in PHP, but I'm no programmer. I have assembled computers, but I'm no technician. My primary advantage when it comes to figuring out what has gone wrong on the computer and putting it right is simply that I'm nosy. And I also have reasonably good search engine skills, both with DuckDuckGo and Google. And I know enough not to ask a question like this. I have your browser extension installed and Facebook has started doing something really strange. I see the same results whether your extension is active or not. Is it a problem with Facebook or your extension? Well, the person who asks a question like that should already realize the problem is clearly with Facebook and not with the extension. Why? Because it persists when the extension is disabled. So a lot of this comes down to observation and common sense. When I don't know how to perform a task with a program, I start by looking through the menu structure. Choosing an option that seems like a reasonable choice often solves the problem before I could even find a phone number for support. If I've looked through the entire menu structure, including the submenus and the sub-submenus and the sub-sub-submenus without success, well, then it's time for a search engine. And this is the place where far too many people get stuck. They try to think like Google or DuckDuckGo, and they type needlessly complex terms into the search box. Don't try to impress the search engine. Just type a few words that describe what you want to do, or what the problem is that you're seeing, or the error message you see. I don't often use Photoshop to process multiple files, so I can never remember exactly how to do it. When I searched for Batch Convert Files Photoshop, the problem was solved. Elapsed time, about 20 seconds. Bear in mind that companies really don't want you to call tech support. In the 1990s, WordPerfect offered unlimited free support forever. That's a nice thought, But it's one of the things that killed the company. When users called, they would speak with technicians in Orem, Utah. Callers might have to wait, but WordPerfect had more than music on hold. A live disc jockey told callers how long they should expect to wait. That was unusual then, unheard of now, because the bean counters have determined that every second a user spends on hold or with a technician reduces the CEO's ability to buy a second yacht or another vacation home. Companies want to reduce tech support costs, so tech support is often provided by technicians in India. Many of the employees can provide very good tech service from India, but often they speak such heavily accented English that it's difficult to understand. The first person you'll talk with is what's generally referred to as a level one tech, someone who is guaranteed to be breathing and able to read a checklist. If your problem doesn't fit their structured response system, they won't be allowed to help you, even if they know the answer, and they probably do. That makes nobody happy. The next stop will be a level 2 technician who probably will be allowed to go beyond the script. A level 2 tech will probably solve the problem for you, but the company will have made it difficult for you to get there. And if your problem is a true edge condition, you might eventually be passed to a level 3 technician or a developer, and that could take several days. So the trick is to avoid calling tech support if you can. Use the XKCD chart, step back a bit, and think about what happened before the problem occurred. Have you installed a new application recently? If so, try uninstalling the application. If that fixes the problem, you're basically done. Did the problem appear after you experienced a power outage or a crash? If that's the case, the registry may have been damaged. Use System Restore to go back to a previous system state. You don't have to go back very far, just a few hours or maybe a day. Have you installed some new hardware? Well, drivers are a common problem. Before calling support, check the support section of the device manufacturer's website, because the problem you are seeing has probably been seen and possibly resolved by others. Another option involves specifying the new device's name, the manufacturer, and any error codes in a search. Before implementing any of the recommendations you find, think about them first. Searches can lead to sites that dispense malware, so download new drivers only from the manufacturer's website. And if you can't avoid tech support, well, be prepared. For hardware, make sure you have the model name and number, the serial number, and the purchase date. If you're calling about software, you should have the name of the application, the version number, the purchase date, and in any case, be prepared to provide the operating system name and the version number. If the hardware or software displayed an error message, take notes so you'll be able to give the technician the exact text that was displayed. "I saw an error message" isn't good enough. The technician may be familiar with the specific error message. If not, that message may at least be referenced in a searchable database that the technician has access to. When you have all of the information ready, prepare to wait, maybe for a long time. The longest waits are Monday morning and Friday afternoon. Weekends are usually not good choices either, and don't even think about calling on the day after Christmas. If you have trouble understanding the technician, ask to have the call transferred to a supervisor or escalated to level 2 support. In other words, don't end the call and then try again in hopes of getting somebody who's easier to understand. Most companies prefer that customers use chat functions that have been added to the support section of their website, and it's generally the best option for those who need support. Offshore technicians who may have trouble speaking understandable English almost always type clear English sentences. So before you pick up the phone, see if the company you need to contact has a chat option. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, placing text and graphics on a computer monitor isn't magic, but it may look like it. We have windows that appear in front of other windows and even cast shadows on what's below them. Add the many settings that the operating system offers users, and you'll see there are many options for changes. Not all changes are good. Probably the most commonly modified settings are scale and resolution. These settings may appear to perform essentially the same functions, but they don't. In simple terms, resolution refers to the number of pixels on the screen, and scaling indicates how much everything shown on the screen will be enlarged. Ideally, resolution should be the native resolution of the monitor, which Windows will show as recommended, and the scale should be 100%. There are times when exceptions are appropriate. My computer has two external monitors with 2560 by 1440 pixel resolutions, and the built-in monitor has a native resolution of 3840 by 2160. To see these settings on your computer, right-click any blank area on the desktop of any monitor and choose Display Settings, or open Settings and then choose the System tab and then open Display. The clearest text will always use the monitor's native resolution, but scaling can be changed as needed. For example, text on my notebook's screen is unreadable at 100% scaling. Microsoft recommends 200% scaling, but that causes problems with some applications. I found 150% works better. But the difference in resolution between the external monitors and the built-in screen caused some other problems, particularly when I drag a window to or from the notebook screen. I don't use the notebook screen for editing or reading text, so I'm willing to forego a bit of clarity, and I operate the monitor at 2560 by 1440 resolution and 100% scaling. Except in conditions like that, it's wise to resist changing resolution. Lowering resolution makes everything bigger, just as scaling does, but it also increases the size of the monitor's pixels. This actually can work to some extent with old cathode ray tube screens, but not with flat panel monitors that are forced to interpolate pixels in ways that reduce clarity. If you need to make text larger, use the scaling option. Windows 11 does a much better job with scaling than previous versions of Windows did, but the changes still don't work properly with all applications, particularly some older applications. Once you've sorted out the resolution and scaling that works best for you, run Microsoft's ClearType utility to optimize text. Note that if you have modified a screen's resolution, ClearType will recommend setting it back to the recommended native resolution and will not proceed unless you do. So, if your resolution setting is more important than improving the appearance of text on that particular monitor, select the other screens manually for ClearType tuning. Start by opening Settings and choose the Personalization tab, then select Fonts, expand Related Settings, and click Adjust ClearType Text. You'll see some screenshots on the TechBiter Worldwide website. And if you want to learn about the science behind how ClearType works, see Microsoft's explanation. You'll find a link to that on the TechBiter Worldwide website. The next screen, ClearType Text Tuner, shows whether ClearType is enabled or not. If it isn't, click the box to turn it on, and then click the Next button. You can choose to tune all monitors or individual monitors. If you're using the non-standard resolution on any monitor, choose to tune the others individually. For each monitor, you'll see a series of text samples. These might remind you of a trip to the eye doctor. Which is better, one or two? And to take just a quick look at what's going on behind the scenes, it might be helpful to understand that each of my 2560 by 1440 pixel monitors has actually 10,240 sub-pixels horizontally. The vertical count is still 1440. The human eye isn't able to differentiate colors on such a small scale, so a combination of the three primary colors, red, green, and blue, can represent millions of intermediate colors. It's these sub-pixels that the text tuner works with. Subpixel font rendering takes advantage of that by anti-aliasing the subpixel level instead of the pixel level, because no two screens are identical, even from the same manufacturer. And everyone's visual perception is unique. Settings that work for one person may not work properly for another. And your perception may change over time. So repeat this occasionally. As you work through examples for each monitor, keep in mind that there is no right or wrong response. Choose the representation that works best with your eyes and your monitors. And don't be surprised if the settings differ between two side-by-side monitors, even if they're from the same manufacturer and they're the same model. So, in short, all of this is pretty complicated. The ClearType tuning function attempts to eliminate that complexity and allows users to adjust their computer monitors to fit their needs. Changes may be subtle, but they are significant. Perhaps you've heard the term AI PC. A few early attempts at creating computers with artificial intelligence features exist, but the early adopters paradox is in play here. Whatever you buy now will be absurdly expensive, and it's likely to be replaced by a more powerful model soon at a lower price. There will be no shortage of computers labeled as AI PCs, even though these computers may have just a few characteristics of those devices. Not that computer manufacturers would ever distort the truth, even by a little, in their advertisements. A true AI PC is likely to have hardware optimized for AI, graphics processing units or tensor processing units with parallel processing capabilities. They'll run on operating systems designed for natural language processing and other AI functions. Cameras, microphones, and other sensing devices will be built in to provide additional input for the AI assistants. View some of the first-generation Star Trek episodes where an AI computer ran the Starship Enterprise. It just wasn't called AI back then. Microsoft is adding the Copilot key to keyboards, and that is the most significant change to keyboards in about three decades. If your keyboard doesn't yet have this key, well, just press the Windows key and C, as in Copilot. So far, Copilot can't do much to run the PC other than maybe change from light mode to dark and back again, take a screenshot and open File Explorer. That's about it for now. So expect a major development effort from Microsoft. These Copilot features aren't intended for IT professionals. The goal will be to allow users to change settings even if they don't know which sub-sub-sub menu they're located on. And it could eventually make that XKCD tech support chart that I mentioned earlier obsolete. An AI PC could be better equipped to protect itself from threats. If that causes you to think of the HAL 9000 computer in 2001 A Space Odyssey, I'm sorry, Dave, I'm afraid I can't do that. Well, you're not alone. But AI could recognize and shut down malware, phishing, and scams before they could harm or steal your information. We'll begin to see AI PCs that actually live up to some of the promises in 2025 and 2026, and development is likely to move fast. Manufacturers are already working on home computers with neural processing units that will eliminate the need to use cloud-based large language models. Lenovo has demonstrated built-in technology that can already perform more computer and configuration functions than Microsoft's Copilot. It's called AI Now. Initially, it'll be limited to computers sold in China. Hang on, it's going to be an interesting ride. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.